Community and Regional Affairs meeting to order this morning. Looks like we've got a quorum. Present are Representative Sisna, Representative Olson, Co-Chair Fairclough, and myself, Representative Ledoux. We have before us House Bill number 369, entitled An Act Relating to Certain Grants Awarded by the Department of Environmental Conservation. Representative Gatto, are you here to introduce this bill?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Madam Chairs and committee members. Auspicious beginning. I hate to use the word simple, but really it's clear what the bill does. It simply changes population numbers that allow certain municipalities that are having rusty pipes and difficult issues that was it Representative Thomas, I think, had discussed on the floor of issues where we had sanitation problems. And so by raising the population numbers to communities that would be allowed, we can grant money to municipalities that would be able to fix the leaky pipes. It is, it's got a pretty good fiscal note, but you'll notice it's a single year, fix the pipes and be done with it maybe for another 50 years. There are communities below the 1,000, and they get 100% funding through Village Safe Water. So this allows some of the communities that have populations above 5,000, all the way up to 10,000, to be able to take advantage of a program that will allow them to fix issues that are related to public health. There are several people that did want to testify, I think, that could add immeasurably to describing what the issue is.
Any questions for Representative Gatto? I guess I've got one question for you, Representative Gatto. By municipalities, does that include just cities, or would a borough be included in a municipality?
It's a very good question, because we've had some difficulty. I guess everything is what he says. We had some difficulty defining that ourselves, and Representative Green's administrative aide is here, and we discussed that just a bit earlier as to what the definition of a municipality was. And
perhaps
Mr. Vander Kolk has just whispered in my ear that it's everything that you just mentioned.
So that it does include boroughs.
Yes. I guess if you can get the populations within these boundaries, then it would be included, yeah.
So I guess I'm thinking about Kodiak, for example. Now, the city of Kodiak has a population of about 6,000 people. So that would mean that the city of Kodiak, 5,937 people, thank you. So that would mean that the city of Kodiak, under this new criteria, would be eligible for a grant.
Correct. Actually, it's upping the grant allowance. They would have fallen, as their population grew, from below 5,000 to above 5,000. They now would be entitled to a lower grant, and this allows the change to include them as if they hadn't grown. And maybe Kodiak has had the same issue that City of Palmer has, which is roughly the same size, is that their population growth took them outside of the parameters of the matching money.
But I guess I'm just thinking about the borough of Kodiak that has a population of around 14,000 people. So they would only qualify for the 50%
And Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, I would have
Certainly.
Mr. Vander Kolk.
Want to identify yourself?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Rick Vander Kolk, staff to Rep. Gatto. That's correct. It's 50%. It's not changing that threshold. Any municipality with 10,000 residents or more would still be at a 50% assistance possible from the state. This is just dealing with that 5,000 to 10,000 threshold, and we have 8 communities affected by it currently.
Okay. What would happen with respect to, like, the fiscal note, for example, if we upped it a little bit higher to, like, maybe 15,000?
I would have to defer to one of the DEC personnel on that, the agency representatives.
It would go up.
Is there anybody here from the agency who could?
I believe so.
Real quickly, Mark Carlson Van Dort, legislative liaison for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, and we should have shortly online Lynn Kent, who's the director of water, and Bill Griffith, who's the facilities manager. But if you upped it to 15,000, I'm looking at the list of communities that you should have in a packet, or I'm hoping there's a list of communities with population. And if you up the population to 15,000, it doesn't look like it would affect the fiscal note significantly, if at all, because there's quite a jump between Fairbanks at 30,552 and the next populated city of Sitka, which is 8,833. So there's a pretty wide margin in there.
So I'm just looking at this. If you upped it to 15,000, besides Kodiak, would that include anybody else?
Madam Chair, it would include, looks like, based on this list, Wasilla, Kenai, Ketchikan, Sitka. There's about 8 cities in there. Yeah. Bethel, Palmer, and Homer would be included.
Representative Fairclough.
Thank you. Could you speak to the value of the program?
I wish that they were here to answer that question for you. Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, it is my understanding that this program has been very beneficial to these smaller communities, smaller municipalities, in that it allows those communities with smaller population bases and smaller rate and lower, you know, less ratepayers to fund these water and sewer projects without, you know, significantly taxing the population, the rate-paying population. So from a DEC perspective, we're supportive of the bill.
Thank you. Yes. Representative Gatto, could I ask you, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Representative Gatto, I know that you represent smaller communities that would be affected advantageously by this bill, but I represent communities that are small too, but we're inside the municipality of Anchorage. And so I'm wondering the value and the equity issue here. I understand wanting to lower costs for people who can't find those means by themselves, but I have homeowners on 5-acre parcels that are sitting there with effluent and bacteria. They're hauling water daily. They're sitting on large lots, and they can't afford the $90,000 to $135,000 assessment by the municipality of Anchorage to run the water through on the 50-50. Why are we limiting it by population versus density of a population in an area if all Alaskans are equal?
I'm going to agree with you because when I was a fireman in Eagle River, I had people from Peters Creek and Chugiak who would stop by the station every day with a truck with a big plastic tank on the back. And they said they had 3 wells drilled and just didn't have water, so they were hauling water. As the lots get bigger, though, and more remote, people tend to have a personal septic system. I don't know that they can even afford to be on city sewers because it just takes so much money to extend a sewer line. So mostly people in smaller communities are going to be separated by bigger distances and have a personal wastewater system. I know I do, my own well, my own septic. And the nearest septic line, sewer line from the city would be so far that no one would be more than the price of my house to extend to it. So, right, smaller people don't have, unless they already are on the sewer system, is that what you're saying?
Go ahead.
No, they're not already on the sewer system.
But you're saying you would like to give them some assistance with their personal wastewater treatment?
Madam Chairman, I think the questions go this way right now. but I appreciate having a dialogue, and I appreciate this coming before us. I'm saying that there are people inside the municipality of Anchorage, the state's largest city, that are struggling for both assistance with septic disposal and with water. And I will vote to move this one forward, but I'm trying to find a partner in that. Maybe we should start looking, instead of population as a base, density of population in a particular area, because I have people in Peters Creek for my community, Chugiak, Birchwood, that are sitting on large lots that are apt to lose their lots if anything fails, if their septic fails, if their water fails. And then we have these enormous assessments that come in, because we can rescue at a cost that piece of property, but it means that they lose their you know, their estate or their the land that they've lived on.
I know it's not pertinent to this, but I was home a month ago and discovered that my well pump had failed in only 5 years, which meant I'd now put the second one in a five-year period, which is astronomical. I could afford to do it, but I felt there are some people that would be devastated by this. And what would I do about those people? This is a bit of a help. at least some people to take advantage. And I know we'd like everybody to have it. We do have in the smallest communities the Village Safe Water, which is 100%. But we got this, I'm sure we have this limbo in between Village Safe Water and what this bill addresses. And I apologize, I think we do.
Do you have another question, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think our city manager probably could address that question maybe more easily.
One last question. Representative Gatto, of the $3.7 million, do you how many people do you think that will help? How many families?
I don't know. I hope it's more than three.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Further questions? I've got one question for you. One further question, Representative Gatto. Would you have any problems amending this bill for the 50%, for the 70% reimbursement to include communities up to 15,000?
I do, because of the timeliness. There is a companion bill in the Senate that probably will move to completion fairly rapidly, and I don't know that if we amended it, if now we would then have conference committees, what we wanted to do is make sure they were matched up. So as they both arrived at their destination, we have more likelihood of success versus no success.
Thank you. Further questions? Right, thank you. It looks like we've got Lynn Kent and Bill Griffin from DEC here for questions, if anybody has any questions for those folks. We'll now begin the public hearing. I've got several people off net and are online, and then a couple of people here in the audience. So why don't we start with the off-nets. I've got Don Baird from the City of Bethel. Don, are you on the line?
I am here. Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Don Baird. I'm the city manager in Bethel, and I wish to speak in favor of this bill. It will certainly assist us in the extension of our water and sewer capabilities. Right now, we're fortunate to be on the Village Safe Water program, but that covers installation and some repairs of existing lines. But we only have about a third of the population that is on piped water and sewer. Two-thirds are on a hauled water and sewer basis. And right now, for 1,000 gallons a week of water and sewer service, the cost is about $230 a month. And increasing that in order to meet the increased share would really be devastating to these homeowners, these ratepayers. And setting this limit higher and decreasing the local share would certainly be beneficial to those who have to pay the costs. So we are in favor of House Bill 369.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else online? All right, then I think we've got a couple of people here in the audience. Is Kathy Wasserman here?
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League, and we are in favor very much of House Bill 369. There are three communities that are right on the cusp of almost passing 5,000, which will also benefit from this in just a matter of time, and that's Unalaska, Valdez, and Barrow. You asked the question, how many people could this help? Well, in truth, it might, if this bill were not to pass, it could negatively impact the entire population of all eight of these communities, and that when they did replace their pipes, they had to raise taxes if they had less money to be able to utilize to do the work. These communities are growing communities, and we would hope that they would get a little bit of help, the extra help in repairing and making improvements to the pipe systems that they have at this time.
Did you have a question, Representative Fairclough?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was of an increased expenditure of $2.7 million, how many more projects would go forward, not the benefit?
I see.
So no worries. I know many people could be helped by a single project, but I was wondering how much it actually would put on the table for other communities use.
I see.
So, but I can ask DEC.
Okay.
Thank you.
And also, Representative Ledoux, I think this borough thing probably got a lot more oomph than needed. Most of the boroughs do not usually exercise or have the powers to do sewer and water. Usually the cities do that. So it's probably, even though they would fall under the definition of municipalities, it's probably not that crucial of an item, because the cities are usually the ones that step out and do the water and sewer improvements.
Thank you. Any further questions for Kathy? Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
We've got Bill Allen.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to preface my remarks by saying thank you for holding this hearing. This issue is extremely important.
Bill, can you identify yourself for the record?
Well, with my name, I'm kind of worried about doing that from time to time.
That's why you better identify yourself for the record.
Well, I check into the Baranoff and they won't let me have a room. But my name is Bill Allen. I'm the city manager of Palmer. And proud to be here this morning to address this issue. Presently, the way the statute reads is the local contribution is based on population, as has been reported. Now it's 85% for 1,000 residents or fewer, 70% 1,000 up to 5,000, and 50% for those communities with a population of over 5,000 residents. And what we're trying to accomplish here is to reduce that local contribution by 20%. In other words, a 30% local contribution, 70% grant. And as has been stated, there are eight communities impacted, with three more just kind of hanging on the edge. I'd like to discuss this bill, House Bill 369, from a local perspective. Palmer is about 5,574, to be exact, according to this. And, you know, we're growing, and we want to grow. However, we are unable as a community to maintain or to get ahead of our infrastructure based on our growth factor. And really, what's happening is because of the high cost of living, primarily fuel, heating fuel, and the lack of employment in rural communities, we're getting an immigration of people in the city of Palmer as well as our Matsu borough. But, you know, as I said, we do have a problem keeping up because we do not have adequate water and sewer to serve that increased population, especially at the rate it's growing. If this proposed statute, proposed law was in place today, we would use the money to improve our current system. We have pipe, thin-walled steel pipe in our water system that's almost 50 years old, and it has to be replaced. Our leakage rate, 40%. We lose 40% of the water that we generate because our pipes are so corroded. And so, you know, if we don't do something about it, we're either going to be declared wetlands or we're really going to have a serious problem. That was supposed to be funny. The other thing, too, we have a 1,700 ratepayer base. And you take several million dollars and amortize it over a 20 or 25-year life and distribute that amongst 1,700 people, that has a pretty serious impact. Plus, we're looking at an issue of noncompliance on our wastewater treatment plant. The EPA has come in with new standards, and we've got 2 years to comply. Well, if you look at it just for Palmer, if we were to do what is required to be in compliance with EPA for our wastewater treatment plant, we're looking at a ticket of over $50 million. So what we've done is we've gone to our neighboring community, Wasilla, into the borough and said, hey, let's form a regional wastewater treatment plant. And to do that, it's going to be $100 million, but the EPA only allows a permit for one outfall, and there are several other reasons, in addition to just common sense of proposing a regional supply. I talked a few minutes ago about keeping up with the increase in population. We also want to annex. Palmer is only 5 square miles, and we are looking at a aggressive annexation. And those people obviously are going to ask the question, well, if we join the city, what are our benefits? And we'd like to be in a position to respond by saying you will be receiving city water and sewer within a certain timeline. And with the passage of this bill and the reduction of local contribution would go a long way in helping us expand our borders in the city. This bill has not changed the population since 1994. And, you know, things have changed in that period of time. And Palmer, obviously, has been caught up in that change to the increase in population. And not that we're complaining. We enjoy sharing our beautiful community with others, and we encourage people to reside in Palmer. But, you know, we have to provide them with safe water and sanitary sewer system. Thank you again. That concludes my remarks. I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions? Did you raise your hand, Kurt? Representative?
No.
Representative Sista?
Well, I have, it is early and traveling until sort of late last evening, I guess this got kind of slowed me down, but I'm thinking more and more about the safe water issue, which is central to this. I know that the representative from D.C. Was speaking of a list of communities, and the only list I see is the one that's got, I think, the eight communities on it that was in the packet. And I'm wondering if, in fact, there's more than that in terms of looking at other communities that over the 10,000, because, Madam Co-Chair, I am sort of interested in your idea, thinking in terms of the age of these communities and the fact that we have communities that have been in existence for a long time in Alaska, and this whole business of infrastructure that is decaying is definitely a concern when you're talking about safe water.
Representative Sista, did you have a question for...
Yeah, the question would be, thank you very much, Madam Chair. The question would be if DEC has the list that sounded like it was present. I thought there was something that was being the representative of DEC that's here.
I think, Representative Sista, that we have a representative from DEC on the telephone, and we also have Ginger Blaisdell with Senator Green's office might be able to answer some of those questions. I was wondering whether you had a question for Mr. Allen here.
No, Madam Chair. I thought I made it clear I was really interested in the D.C.
All right.
But yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, you did a good job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So is there, would you like to ask the D.E.C.? We've got Lynn Kent and Bill Griffith from D.E.C., and we also have Ginger Blaisdell from Senator Green's office. You want to join us? So who would like to tackle Representative Sista's question?
Good morning. My name's Ginger Blaisdell, and I'm staff to Senator Green. And I think some of the questions that are coming up, there's one piece that's missing, and it's part of DEC's program and how it works. The first point is, in the fiscal note, the reason there's only funding shown for one fiscal year is because each year cities and municipalities have to apply for these grants. They don't know how many cities might apply for a grant, and they don't know which cities might apply. And so they really don't know out year costs, but there will be costs in future years. The second point is, how many people will it serve? It also depends on that application period, or what applications come in. They also can only approve a certain number of grants. It depends on legislative appropriation. So if we only appropriate, say, $5 million to the Safe Water Program, they'll only fund as many grants as fit in that particular appropriation. So there are limits that are put on by the legislative appropriation process. You might see millions and millions of water and sewer projects that might be submitted, but it's legislative controls that say how many would be funded. So that might be part of how many people are served and how much the program would cost in the future. This program started as the Federal Clean Water Act in the 1980s, and it changed to the Alaska Clean Water Act in, I think it was the late 1990s, where the federal funding went away. It became a state-funded program. We still follow those same rules that the feds had required. And again, it's just up to the power of appropriation that limits who is served. So, does that help?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm thinking millions of projects wouldn't happen because we've got 600,000 population, and there's a lot of communities that would not qualify for this assistance. Am I right? It is communities right now that are under, let's see, how does it work? Under 5,000? Is that right? And so there is a limit to how many actual applicants there might be.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Cisna, one thing that you'll see in this program is that for cities that are population 1,000 or less, they still have a match rate that they have to come up with. So they still have to pay for 15% of the project. If they don't have an economic base to pay for even that 15%, they may not apply. So there is some community participation that has to occur. And then the cities that are population 1,001 to 5,000 at this point have to come up with a 70-30 match. So they have to come up with 30% of the project. If they can't convince DEC that they have the funding base to pay the 30%, they probably won't get ranked high enough in the application process to be one that would be granted or awarded the grant. So there's still that city participation factor. And then the 50-50 match, which is 5,001 and higher, that's the part that we're looking at changing right now, is getting those communities that are just over the 5,000 cusp to get them, instead of having to pay 50% of the cost, to allow them to pay 30% of the cost and let the state bear a little bit more of the financial burden.
Representative Cisna, did you have a follow-up?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I guess my question would be, how many communities, let's look at last year, how many communities did put in applications and were the funds utilized completely, or was there leftover afterwards?
Through the chair, Representative Cisna, I did ask DEC a few weeks ago about how cities have been able to spend down the funds that they've been awarded. It takes a couple of years sometimes to get those projects complete, but they fully anticipate that the cities will use all of the money that was granted to them for these water and sewer projects.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for a follow-up. I'm interested in the total amount that the state has itself, and what impact is there on the money that's allocated. Does that money get used up? And maybe it's DEC that really needs to answer that question.
Mm-hmm. I would probably ask Bill. Is Bill Griffin on board?
Bill Griffin, Lynn Kent, and we also have Marit here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, this is Bill Griffiths. And for the record, I'm the Facility Programs Manager for the Division of Water, Department of Environmental Conservation. As Ms. Blaisdell was saying, these are multi-year capital projects. Typically can take anywhere from 1 year up to 4 or 5 years to complete. And yes, it is our experience that communities that request these funds do utilize them for the intended purpose, but just can take a period of years to do so. I might add that for fiscal year 09 funding, we received a total of about $52 million in grant applications, grant requests. And this year, we are asking for roughly half of that, about $26 million, to be funded by the legislature for these projects. So about half of the overall requested projects we're requesting funding for this year.
And thank you. Further follow-up, Madam Chair. And this legislation, if in fact that world changed following this legislation, can you estimate what the difference would be? It was 52 million requests this year, and if it in half of the next amount with a larger number of communities or a larger number of at least projects that could be potentially covered. Can you guesstimate what that might be?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the question. I'm sorry.
If I'm wondering, with this legislation, how it would change those numbers, because that's, I think, partially what we're talking about. We're trying to expand the number of communities that would be qualified for this money. And so how might it change what actually happens? I think that's normally it's a different process perhaps than a fiscal note, but it does seem like it would be a cost, or it'd be a request to the legislature. It'd be nice to know what that request might be.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Sisna, this year, the difference in cost in order to fund the same number of projects is about $3.7 million. In future years, if this bill were to pass, each year the extra cost associated with funding the same number of projects will depend on the number of grant applications from the cities that are in this population range. And every year that varies a little bit. We might get proportionally a little more of the requests coming from those cities, and the cost could be, the extra cost that year might be more than the $3.7 million, or we might receive fewer requests from these cities, and the extra cost might be less than that. So as Ms. Blaisdell was saying, we have an annual grant application period that runs from May through July, and each year it depends on which cities apply for funding, how much they apply for, and how high they score. We have a prioritization system and a scoring criteria, and it depends on how they score and how we prioritize them and which cities apply. So we don't know which ones will apply this summer yet or how they'll score, but we can expect that each year there would be some additional cost to the state, since it would be paying a greater percentage of the overall project cost in these cities.
Go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair, for a follow-up. I must admit, I am thinking right now of communities that I've visited and the problems that we have with safe water. Some communities just simply don't have safe water. They don't. They don't have the systems that can get that to them. And I'm wondering right now what percentage of the communities that actually are putting in applications for the grants that are remote or rural communities, because if in fact the match, I'm wondering how this legislation helps us actually increase the safety of our state. And really, if we're doing this right, we're really looking across the state and trying to make sure that in those places that we have absolutely horrible conditions, that at least we get them up to speed. And if we put our money where people can afford to put that safe water system, then we reduce the money that we will spend in places where they can't match. Can you answer that, Mr. Griffin?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, I should probably point out that there are two different programs and capital funding requests involved. This bill would affect the match ratio for cities who are applying through the municipal matching grant program. Most of the smaller rural communities throughout the state are not required to provide a local match. They are eligible for capital funding through the Village Safe Water Fund program. The Village Safe Water program doesn't require a capital match. There's eligibility requirements. All second-class cities are eligible to apply through the Village Safe Water program. First-class cities, less than 600 people, and unincorporated communities, less than 600 people. So that encompasses over 200 communities throughout the state and most of the smaller rural communities, I think, that you're talking about, and probably the ones with the least level of service are included in that group. And we have a separate capital request for those projects, and it's probably important to point out that we also receive federal funding for those projects. 75% of the funding for projects in Village Safe Water communities is provided by either the U.S. EPA or USDA Rural Development Program. And we only need to provide 25% required state match with state funds. So it's a separate request, and what we generally do is just to request that required state match for any federal funds that are available, and then it's a separate decision on the part of the legislature how much funding to provide for these municipal grant projects each year.
One last question of Mr. Griffith. I'm not going to follow this any further, but I would love to ask that you make available at your convenience some information on the Village Safe Water Fund and the funding amount, because I'd like to see a comparison of the amounts for the two different existing systems. And I'd thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Griffin? Any further questions for Cindy Blaisdell?
Ginger.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. For the record, Ginger Blaisdell from Senator Green's office. One comment that I was going to make is you had asked what the impact might be if the population change, rather than stopping at 10,000, went to 15,000. It wasn't terribly long ago that Sitka and Ketchikan were probably close to that 10,000 population threshold, and they've lost some population in recent years. So they may have gone slightly above the 10,000. Changing it to 15, you know, in case that population starts to grow again, certainly they would appreciate a more attractive match rate for those communities. So if there aren't any specific cities between 10,000 and 30,000 at this point, if you wanted to raise that to 15,000, it might encourage those cities that are close to 10,000, it might encourage them to have more kind of an economic boost to that community. They won't be detrimented if they do go above 10,000. In the case of Palmer, like Bill Allen was talking, if they did annex some other area around the city, if that pushes them close to a 10,000 population threshold, they might appreciate something going up to 15,000 as well. We just picked 10,000 as kind of the next rounded number of population that would group in these few cities that have just passed the 5,000 threshold, but maybe don't have a high enough population base to pay for the additional cost that comes with that economic growth.
Thank you. So. Further questions? All right, is there anybody else online or in the audience who would like to testify? Then I will close public comment, bring this bill back to the committee for discussion. Any discussion here? Representative Faircloth.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move out of committee HB 369. 25-LS1491/A with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objections, the bill's moved. It is 9:05, and we're adjourned.